I was born in one of the cities of the exile, but always I regarded myself as one who was born in Jerusalem. In a dream, in a vision of the night, I saw myself standing with my brother Levites in the Holy Temple, singing with them the songs of David, King of Israel, melodies such as no ear has heard since the day our city was destroyed and its people went into exile. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 113, The Magnificence of Measurements. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. How is memory most magnificently manifest? How does one show love and loyalty to the recollection of what one loves? One thinks first and foremost of dramatic acts of devotion, extraordinary works of art, or profound poetry and prose. What one does not immediately imagine in this context is a seemingly didactic delineation of measurements, the description in intricate detail of the blueprints of a building. And yet it is just such a series of measurements, recorded in the 3rd century CE, that provides us with one of the most resonant reflections of the Jewish love of Jerusalem. Even as the period of the leadership of Rabbi Judah the Patriarch in the north of the Holy Land seems to have begun under the threat of persecution, it is in Rabbi Judah's age that a better relationship with Rome seems to have been reached. The Talmud contains many stories about a Roman ruler called Antoninus, who showed affections for Rabbi Judah and who ultimately granted him autonomy in leadership. Who this Roman ruler was is not exactly clear, but it appears that this new and improved relationship was achieved with the rise of the dynasty of the Roman Emperor Septimus Severus, a dynasty that began at the end of the 2nd century CE. Martin Goodman, citing the Talmud, tells us as follows, quote, "It is likely, at the least, that Judah Hanasi did indeed have a closer relationship to the Roman government than his predecessors and successors in the rabbinic community, a relationship characteristically expressed in terms of patronage and gifts. Antoninus gave Rebbe 2,000 fine fields in the area of Zabluna in the northern Golan as a tenancy." To which emperor the name Antoninus in the rabbinic text refers is unknown. But if Judah Hanasi flourished in the early 3rd century, it is reasonable to link these traditions to an improvement in the attitude of some rabbis towards the Roman state in the Severan period, and perhaps to accommodation by at least some Jews to Roman rule. End quote. Ultimately, Rabbi Judah resided over one of the few tranquil periods of classical Jewish history. As both a political and religious leader, he oversaw an age in which the personal acrimony between certain rabbis of the past diminished, when various rabbinic schools faded away, and when a unified rabbinic Judaism truly came to be. Rabbi Judah the Nasi, the patriarch or ethnarch, was wealthy, powerful, and pious, revered by all. And it was precisely because it was with him and only with him that, in the words of the rabbis, one found gedula v'torah b'makom echad, unassailable political and religious authority in one man, that he was able to achieve the composition and compiling of the Mishnah as the central code of religious Jewry. What is remarkable about the Mishnah is that Rabbi Judah chose to utilize this moment of codification, not only to preserve Jewish observance in the future, but also to remember every aspect of Jerusalem's past. One of the 6 orders of the Mishnah, known as Kodashim, or sacred offerings, is a complete codification of the laws of the temple, of the animal offerings, the grain offerings, and many other aspects of the ritual atop the mount and in Jerusalem, ensuring that these rites were not forgotten. But most interesting of all is a tractate in this order of the Mishnah that reflects the Jewish refusal to forget the structure that was the temple itself. This small work is known as Masechet Midot, literally tractate measurements, and this tractate is unlike any other in the Talmud. Most Mishnaic tractates are about rituals, not just commonly performed ones, but also what one does in hypothetical cases. If an ox gores another ox, if a particular offering in the temple is mixed up with another, if one is planting 3 types of seeds in the same field. But this tractate is about architecture. It describes bit by bit, room by room, gate by gate, the layout of the Second Temple. Whether this is the Second Temple pre-Herod or post-Herod is an interesting question. But what we are being given, by and large, is not a series of laws, but rather an attempt in words and in measurements to create an image in one's mind. And it was composed in the age of Rabbi Judah the Prince, who was himself born many decades after the destruction. This illustrates how particular Jews were in preserving the image of the temple in their minds. Not just the generalities, but the midot, the very measurements of the temple. Ladies and gentlemen, can you think of any other civilization or people who painstakingly recalled every inch of an edifice even 50 years after it was destroyed, let alone 1,000 years? And yet Masechet Midot is studied to this day. The Talmud, the Mishnah, is seen as legalistic, and the very name Tractate Measurements sounds incredibly didactic, but can there be a more exquisite embodiment of a people's love affair with a building that crowned a beloved city? Cambridge historian Simon Goldhill, in his book On the Temple, reflects as follows. Quote, "Most remarkable, however, is the Talmud's attempt to make the temple live on its pages. The Tractate Midot, Measurements, which atypically has not discussion, Gemara, rehearses the measurements of Herod's temple cubit by cubit and runs through the map of the building, recording the use of different rooms. It is an act of remembrance made poignant especially by such comments as this little discussion between two rabbis. As for the southwestern small chamber," said Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, "I forget what it was used for. Abba Saul says they used to store there wine and oil, and it was called the oil storage room." The map, Goldo continues, is not merely laid out for us. It is staged as a threat of forgetting, defeated by an act of memory. To study is to memorialize the destroyed temple. End quote. Jerusalem, in other words, at a time when it was physically made into Aelia Capitolina, was kept intellectually alive in the minds of Jews. It is with this in mind that we can ponder how this tractate about the structure of the temple is itself seemingly structurally strange, because while most of it does indeed describe the building that was the temple, it begins first and foremost with the obligation to guard the temple. The Mishnah describes the precise place in the temple complex that the priests would stand as watchmen, and the other locations where it fell to the Levites to watch over the temple. This is striking and, at first blush, strange. It would seem to make more sense for the Mishnah to first describe the entire layout of the temple, and then to tell us where the guards of the temple were located. I have suggested, and I believe certain earlier commentaries have given a version of this answer as well, that the Mishnah begins with the question of guarding the temple because it is explaining why, decades after the temple's destruction, it is still important to remember every aspect of the image of this edifice. What the tractate is telling us is the following. You may think that with the temple gone, the obligation to guard the temple, to protect it, to keep it safe, can no longer be fulfilled. But you would be wrong, because we, the Jewish people, can still safeguard the image of the temple in our hearts, an image preserved in every exquisite detail. We are obligated to ensure that this blueprint will be kept alive, and that we will watch over it until the physical temple can return. Thus, the famous biblical verse, "Al chomotayach Yerushalayim hifkadati shomrim kol hayom v'chol halayla." On your gates, Jerusalem, I appointed guardians all day and night. This is perhaps not only a statement about Jerusalem as it was, but about Jerusalem for eternity. Jews remained the guardians of Jerusalem, keeping an image in their hearts, guarding it fiercely. A beautiful expression of this was expressed by Shai Agnon, the 1966 Israeli laureate for literature, who in front of the audience in Sweden said the following, quote, "As a result of the historic catastrophe in which Titus of Rome destroyed Jerusalem and Israel was exiled from its land, I was born in one of the cities of the exile, but always I regarded myself as one who was born in Jerusalem. In a dream, in a vision of the night, I saw myself standing with my brother Levites in the Holy Temple, singing with them the songs of David, king of Israel, melodies such as no ear has heard since the day our city was destroyed and its people went into exile." End quote. Agnon was saying this in 1966, when the old city of Jerusalem, to his great pain, was cut off from Israel, cut off from the Jewish people. Agnon wanted his audience to know that that Jerusalem was still in Jewish hearts. Rabbi Judah's Mishnah of Measurements set the stage for a trend that would continue throughout Jewish intellectual history, the painstaking drawing, recording, and commenting on the makeup of the temple, both the first temple and the second temple, as well as the temple to which Jews look forward in the future. Thus, we have, for example, the great work by the 17th century Rabbi Yom Tov Lipman Heller describing Ezekiel's vision of the third temple. And then there was Rabbi Lipman Heller's contemporary, Judah Leon, a rabbi in the Sephardic community in Amsterdam, who built a model of Solomon's temple, a model that he actually took on the road, displaying it for Gentiles in England. The preservation of the precise measurements of the temple in Jerusalem may seem like an obsession, but it ultimately embodies the refusal to forget, the refusal to give up, highlighting how, in the midst of measurements, one finds magnificence, in the midst of delineations and details, devotion, in blueprints, beauty, how, in the recollection of one building, one discovers the essence of Jewish endurance and eternity. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.